Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope, and I'm your host, Rory Hearn, and I'm joined today back by my long-lost friend, Tony Groves. Tony, how are things?
I'm not too bad, Rory. I'm actually energized by watching you this morning at the conference talking about housing and homelessness and the impact that it's having on society. I actually feel like, you know what, you actually did the Lord's work out there, Rory. You were inspiring people. I think at one stage you were trending on social media. Now, albeit, I don't know how you were tweeting and talking at the same time, so fair play to you.
I did feel a bit possessed. No, the other thing. What are you inspired by the Lord? All right. It went very well, actually. It was Inclusion Health organized it, and they are a network of, I suppose, clinicians and people interested in the area of inequality. It was really, I suppose, it's just such a thing that's close to my heart in terms of the impact of homelessness, particularly on children, and what we need to do around it. And that's what we're focused on today. We're back on housing, and we are delighted to be joined by two Dublin City councillors who represent the Artane Whitehall ward, who are today working together, which we're delighted to see. And we have Councillor John Lyons and Councillor Alison Gilliland, who is also the chair of the Housing SPC in Dublin City Council. John and Alison, it's great to have you with us on Reboot Republic.
Good to be here, Rory.
Great to be here.
And a reminder to our listeners, as always, these podcasts cost to produce. We need support. If you can become a patron, go over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack and become a patron. Mm-hmm. Support us in what you can to keep these podcasts going out. And keep Tony's ego.
Can I say something for listeners? Do head over and just check out for the array of podcasts. The two Norries from Cork have joined us in the last couple of weeks, and they are doing incredible work. I'm so proud that of the stuff that they've done, and I'll be killed for saying it, but the feedback from people who are telling them that the conversations are talking about recovery and the difference that it's making to people. The lads are too modest to say it themselves, but it's just phenomenal, the response to it. They're brilliant. So check it all out. It's all on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Fair play to them.
Great, great. Yeah, and of course, there's all the back issues of Reboot as well, covering housing inequality, hope, and lots more. We're going to go to first the issue of the Land Development Agency, which is going through the Dáil at the moment. The Housing Minister has proposed it. And I wrote an article myself this week, which was published in the Irish Examiner. I suppose essentially, really raising serious concerns about the Land Development Agency as it is currently constituted. And there's a number of aspects to it which are very worrying. And I think obviously one of the worrying things, I assume, for councillors is the whole issue of the removal of the powers of local councillors to veto the sale of public land. And I suppose this is a part of a wider issues with the bill, which is the whole issue of the focus on market housing, market prices. John Lyons, maybe just to start with you, what's your sense of the LDA bill as proposed?
Yeah, I think, Rory, your article outlines it very well. Like, if you look currently, local government in Ireland is one of the weakest anywhere across the entirety of the European Union. And I think one of the last remaining reserved functions, one of the key functions that we still do have and actually makes public representatives on the council somewhat relevant, is that we have the power to dispose of or not public land. So we're custodians of the public land on behalf of the people of Dublin City. So the LDA, the legislation that's currently constituted, will effectively take that power away from us. They say it won't. The minister says it won't. That will be an option. The first option of public land will have to go to the Land Development Agency. So he's saying that there'll be some kind of a choice there. But this was raised, I think, about a year and a half ago as a threat to us, that if we weren't going to agree to dispose of the O'Devney Garden site and the Oscar Traynor site, that what is coming down the tracks will be the Land Development Agency, which will just take it off us anyway. That was a threat that was in the ether, as I say, about 18 months ago. And I think if it does come to pass and the legislation as it's currently constituted does pass the Oireachtas, I think it will fundamentally put the last nail in the coffin of any hope of providing social and affordable housing in the city of Dublin. It'll make it impossible, because what they're talking about is having 50% of the units built on all state lands being some kind of affordable housing. But as we see from the affordable housing bill, it's not going to be affordable. They're talking, everything's related to market prices. And when the market is the core reference point in your housing policy, and that's, you know, included in the Land Development Agency, I think it's a recipe for disaster. And it's going to ensure that not only this generation, but the next generation are completely locked out of any kind of affordable, secure, long-term, high-quality accommodation. So we're going to fight it, obviously, as councillors, because we have to. As I say, you know, we'll be completely irrelevant if this comes to pass. So we're looking to host a special meeting on it in the City Council to see what we can do. And I do think this is where COVID plays a bit of a role, because the lack of opportunity to mobilise over the last year or thereabouts on many of the issues that have come onto the national agenda, I think has given the government, has emboldened them in a certain fashion. And I think
John, we might push, I just got to push in, because we do need to get Alison on this, but also they've been guillotining things for years. And I saw when you guys overturned them on the Oscar Traynor site that they accused you of doing what they were doing in terms of we don't have the numbers now. Can we get the meeting postponed? Point of order.
Yeah.
It's politics, but at the same time, the LDA, the actual threat in terms of this new bill. Alison, can I get your thoughts on that, if you don't mind?
Yeah, I would agree with John about the removal of the function of councillors to have a say in the disposal of public lands. But what else is in it is around the use of those public lands should they get their hands on it. And the market, as John said, is central to it. The fact that only 50%, and that's an increase from the original 30%, was going to be used for social and affordable housing, which means the other half is not going to be for affordable houses. So it's going to be beyond the reach of those who are locked out at the moment. So that's a big concern. But there's no ideology around what we mean by public housing. I note that the minister uses it quite frequently, but there's no definition of it. And that was something we tried to do in Dublin City Council starting about 18 months ago, when we got stakeholders into a room. We proposed a definition of public housing that was more or less any home that belonged to the state could be rented out to anyone, regardless of their income, for a rent that reflected their income. So it would be affordable. A lot like what we see the social housing rents, with a differential rent that you've long-term security. But the term is bandied about without any real definition, because I know for the minister, a plank in his housing policy is also purchase, home ownership and home purchase. And for a lot of people, they can't even dream of that, because they're in a high rent, generally private rent. They can't even save. And I would say a lot of people, particularly younger people, are paying up on 50, 60% of their income to try and maintain a roof over their head, because they don't qualify for the social housing income thresholds. So when we're talking about public housing, we're very much looking at an ideal that would serve everybody regardless of income, but in the first instance, trying to support those people that are caught above social housing income thresholds and don't belong to the 1% to 5% that can afford the massive rents or to buy a home at prices we have at the moment in Dublin.
Yeah, I think it's a really important, you know, idea and important approach, and it's what public housing should be. John, maybe just set out, because this brings us on to Oscar Traynor and the significant campaigning that you and others have been doing. And I was actually struck by when you said there haven't been the opportunities to mobilize. Actually, there was a very significant mobilization which you and others were leading and part of, and Uplift and others who really had an influence on the council vote that stopped the disposal. So it did show people power can still be mobilized. And of course, it is much more challenging, but it is there. But just on that, Oscar Traynor, maybe you could set out where it's at now in terms of what you're proposing, and contrast that to what is currently, well, I don't know if it's still on the table or not. Maybe you can set out But just set out, what are you proposing at the moment, and where is it at in terms of the Oscar Traynor site and the proposal for the development of it?
The proposal that we rejected last November is gone. It's done. It's finished. So I think any attempt, I haven't seen one, and I don't think there will be any attempt to try and resuscitate that. But the vote that we did take last November to reject the deal with Glenveagh, I think was a direct result, not just of the campaigning that took place in the weeks leading into that vote, but it was also the result of the backlash that happened around the O'Devney Garden disposal the year before. I mean, the anger, the public backlash on that was fierce, and rightly so, because it was a pretty shocking deal. And for those of us who've been advocating for a number of years for an alternative to the Housing Land Initiative, which is 50% private, 30% social and 20% affordable, that's what we've been fighting for the last number of years, but it just fell on deaf ears at that time. So that fed in to the vote last November. But in the meantime, since that vote, Alison has been working with others on a subgroup of the Housing SPC, the Housing Strategic Policy Committee, to develop the alternative proposal, which is, you know, I think the work, the result of cross-party consultation and input. And I think everyone has compromised to a certain degree. And I think it has majority support across the City Council. And what it's proposing, instead of the old deal, which was 50% of the units, developer units, I think, as the City Council's described them before, going for private sale, what we'll have now is 40% social housing, 40% cost rental, and 20% affordable purchase, which to my mind is 100% affordable housing. And that's a proposal that I think should receive the backing of all right-minded councillors on the City Council. And I think is a reflection of where people are at in the City of Dublin. People are desperately in need of affordable housing, whether it is those who are languishing on our social housing lists or those who aren't eligible and are, as Alison has said, are paying through the teeth on a monthly basis in the private rental sector, and a small proportion for those who are looking to own their own home too. But it is about trying to change the idea of housing away from a market commodity to a non-market right. It's the place where you live, where you rear your family, where you grow, and everyone deserves a right to a home, a good place to live and to grow and to flourish. So that's the proposal we have in front of us. The funding will come, we hope, from the Department of Housing and also the European Investment Bank. And there's other avenues to fund the cost rental element of it, because we know interest rates are at a historic low. So this is the opportune time to back, and this is what we hope the minister will do if he is serious about resolving the housing crisis.
But John, John, the first sentence in his new LDA bill refers to the market. I think it's the second paragraph, but it's in the first point, and it refers to a housing market and how that's done. And none of that means, as Alison quite rightly points out, if he's moved it to 50% affordable, by definition, the rest of it is unaffordable. It's out of reach of people. That's what no one says about this. If we define this as affordable, we are ruling out the rest. Alison, can I just, John has made a point around this being a compromise. I kind of, given where we came from with Owen Murphy's bill to where we are with Dara O'Brien's bill that's on the floor, moving it to the next stage, how big of a compromise do you think we need from the, and again, you're right, the minister uses the word ideology a lot. You're not. He has used he has written in the Irish Times about ideology as not being a blocker. But I think it's that idea where they use the market as the blocker. How much of a compromise do we need? How much further on do we need to move them?
I think the minister and central government very much need to realise and accept that access to affordable housing is a right. It's a necessity. And it's not like a roof over your head allows you to live a full and productive life, to have better health, mental health, to have opportunities for employment. You can't. It's almost like the fight or flight and constantly being alert in an adverse situation. If you are constantly in fear of losing your home, you're not going to have a full, holistic, productive, healthy life. So there's a longer term cost to this than just the cost of the bricks and mortar that we have to invest in. And I do very much see providing affordable housing, because people talk about we have a housing crisis. We have an affordable housing crisis. There's loads of apartments down the Docklands that are empty, but no one can live in them because the cost is just too expensive. So it has to be seen as an investment in our society and in the public good. And John's right about the community. We have to bring the community with us. The community are well ahead because they recognise what is affordable and what is not affordable. And when we made the compromise, and everybody, every political party around the table, and we included all political parties and groups in the alternative proposal, did compromise because everybody has their ideal. And I suppose we have what I know it's an oxymoron, a majority consensus on the 40-40-20. There are some people still not happy, because there are some people want to see private purchase, as in a little bit going back to the old Oscar Traynor, the private market. And we very much, the majority very much want to serve those on social housing lists and those that are caught in high rents. But we also want to serve the community. And one of the big things that is really annoying is that while the government will fund social housing and part of that funding does take cognizance of the community and civic amenities needed, when it comes to cost rental, it doesn't. So the cost of your cycleways or your public park, or if you want a retail unit for the local shop underneath, that is all factored into the ultimate rent that you will pay in cost rental. So one of the asks that we have, and I suppose it's putting it up to government and to the ideology, is that government fund the community amenities, that they pay for the cycleways, because that is, it's not just the people that are going to be living in the cost rental units that are going to be using them, it's the entire community. And if we want community cohesion and integration, it has to be like that. So that's one of the big asks in this. And we see that as a way of being able to increase the affordability. The other vehicle that we're looking at increasing affordability is to the service site fund. At the moment, the government gives 50,000 per unit in what we call a service site fund, and that brings down the cost. Now, it brings down the cost as well for the affordable purchase. So you're subsidising somebody by 50K to own their own home, whereas we want that increase to 100,000 so that we can subsidise people who are going to rent in a cost rental or a social rental. And the longevity of that, it's going to be in our housing stock for generations. Mm. So we get more benefit out of that subsidy than the family that moves into the affordable purchase one. That's a once-off. That family will get the subsidy, but it will be sold off. In our proposal, we want to see the council have the first call if that's sold off. Obviously, there'll be a clawback, but we believe that if a subsidy from the public purse has gone in, that should return to the public by way of sell back to the council.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely correct. And it's something that the whole question of investment, cost of housing, is something that has been, you know, ongoing in the public debate. What's your kind of response to what we saw brought up at the housing SPC in relation to the cost of providing public housing by the Dublin City Council QS in relation to the figures of around 400,000 for the cost of public housing? Alison.
I think Mark Burke gave a very good presentation, and it was timely because it came after the Society of Chartered Surveyors had presented their apartment costs. And two things were very clear from that presentation. One was that when Dublin City Council builds, it builds very high quality because it has got its eye to longevity and maintenance. Because at the end of the day, as a council, we are the ones that are going to maintain that. We're also conscious of the tenants that are going to live in it. So we don't want them strangled by high energy costs, and we want them to have space. So the size of what we would build, and sort of say apartments, would be bigger than the apartment standards. So it's very much to an eye of longevity and maintaining ease of maintenance and cost of maintenance into the future. So we build for the future. The other thing that was very clear from the presentation was the whole procurement and tendering process does add to the cost, because it's so bureaucratic that any company or developer that is part of the process will want to get back the investment that they put in to take part in the process, and that will add to the cost of it. There's a very small pool there. Competition is very small, so that will add to the cost. So I suppose the big question is, how can we actually reduce that, reduce the pool of builders, let's say, because ultimately Dublin City Council doesn't have the capacity to build at the moment. And we will have to partner with the private sector in construction. So how do we make it easier for more builders to take part on that, so ultimately the price will go down and there's more competition, healthy competition, let's say?
Well, we've spoken to people for years on this, in terms the likes of Orla Hegarty talks brilliantly about procurement and how we simplify this. We've also seen problems around the strategic housing development and how it's become a tool for
increasing land value by getting a planning permission on it, that's never
exactly
going to be built.
It's land value extraction is what that is essentially. So we're seeing parts of this that are building that in, and we've seen examples only in the recent days where members of the government are complaining that Johnny Ronan's white elephant on the Keys is facing planning problems, which is, you know, and as you quite rightly pointed out 10 minutes ago, there's empty apartments all over Dublin City Centre. Why we need more high-end apartments, no one actually knows, but nonetheless, in terms of Hugh Brennan makes the point that if you wanted to, as you say, compete with it to do it, if they have the land, the builders will work where they work. They don't care whether they're being paid by Johnny Ronan or O'Coolan. They will work where they're paid, you know. So we can do that. We can ramp that up. But my challenge, I suppose, is how do we break the cycle of the idea of needing that middleman, because we do seem to have even in this, we seem to want this middleman. John, have you any thoughts on that?
But yeah, look, this is a key element of it, and I think this is where the councillors who were elected in 2014, including myself and Alison, I think if we look at the last 6 full years, we've unfortunately wasted a lot of time in terms of the lack. We were elected, I think, in the midst of a lost decade, as Rory has described it, in social housing provision due to the cuts that were made to the capital budget for social housing from 2008 to 2014. So we were elected in the midst of that. But right now, I think we've learned some big lessons. And one is that we should not, like we did with the Housing Land Initiative, with O'Devenu Gardens and Oscar Traynor Road, we should not just deal with the broad brushstroke in terms of the percentage to go to social housing versus private versus affordable. We also have to pay so much more attention to procurement, because this is where I think the O'Devenu and Oscar Traynor Road both fell down. They picked a model of procurement which excluded small players. They would have excluded the likes of O'Coolan, because you had to have an annual turnover of 40 million plus. So only the big companies were ever going to tender for those particular projects. So this is a key element, and we have to work through it, because we have a good alternative proposal. It's a very good one, but then it'll come to procurement and trying to get contractors interested in working to develop out the site and to keep construction costs down. We own the land, so that's the biggest cost there excluded. So this is a huge element of it, where I think, in fairness to some of the officials, including the quantity surveyor, Mark Burke, he seems very willing to want to engage with us on these issues. And there's a symposium tomorrow the City Council, Alison, has organised that's going to look at some of these issues, because they're crucial. We have to work through them, and the councillors need to know. They can't just sign off on a deal and then give it over to the officials to deal with the procurement. We have to be centrally involved in it. We have to become more knowledgeable around the issues, because the likes of Orla Hegarty has said that for a site like the Oscar Traynor, you should divvy it up into maybe 6-7 smaller plots. you have better competition, better labour practices.
The Dunkirk model that she talks about, several little boats as opposed to...
Yeah.
So that was one of her, that was one of my favourites of Arla, where you have to get all of these, and it increases competition and exactly. It raises standards amongst the people that are doing it. Sorry, Rory.
But the key thing is on that, we need to find out how we do that. That's the key element of ensuring that the Oscar Traynor Road is developed and delivers affordable housing on that site, that we go through the procurement to in the right way, that we navigate the EU procurement rules, our own Part 8, that we go through the actual official processes and come out the other side with affordable units being built on that site. That's the crucial element, as I say it, aside from the obvious funding and the green light being provided by the Department of Housing.
Tony, you mentioned the middleman there. Like the council, Dublin City Council should be the middleman. They should be the developer. So it's whereby we either use our own architects or you tender out to design the master plan for that site. So that's done. Then the next step is, okay, how are we going to build on this now that we have our master plan? It is, we divide up into little sections that we tender out, as John said, so that you can reduce the cost, but you also get more builders involved. And it's builders we want, building companies as opposed to developer companies. And I do think, looking at a shift, if we can shift back to council-led development, where we retain control, and that means oversight and each step and each phase, it will build confidence not only among the general public, but among the Dublin City Council itself. I had a motion passed last, I think it was July or sometime, asking the council to conduct a viability study on the establishment of a Dublin City Council building company. And so that it could be used in the first instance for maintenance, because at the moment we contract out half our maintenance for voids and general upkeep. And then that we could build capacity to be like Glasgow have it, their own building company where we can build ourselves. And that opens a whole new world to us, both from, as John said, good employment practices, and we can take on apprenticeships and build up capacity. But it gives us greater control then over the cost and over the affordability.
It's extremely hopeful, I have to say. And it's, you know, that we're seem to be, and definitely at a council level, you know, as you as councillors in many ways, you know, have led on this. The argument that, you know, I and others have been making, that, you know, we have to shift back to the state taking responsibility for the delivery of public housing and affordable housing. And that's not just the narrow social housing that's only available to those who are very low incomes. But what you were talking about earlier, Alison, public housing, rental, secure, quality housing that's available to people on a broad range of incomes. Because I think that the flaw within the minister's current, you know, approach of promoting home ownership and saying, I'm, you know, basically everyone should be, what they've said specifically, everyone, you know, should have the opportunity to be a homeowner. It's utterly, divorced from the reality that you have an entire generation out there who are not in a position to get deposits, to actually be in a position to have contracts to get jobs. Many don't want, you know, to take on this huge mortgage. We should, you know, they want the model like Vienna, where we have secure rental quality homes. And I think that the question really does come down to, doesn't it? And maybe, you know, you could indicate on this, that the minister and the Department of Housing have to back this for it to work. They have to agree in the broad sense to fund this. And that is, you know, where do you see that going, assuming that the council pass it? And maybe you could indicate, is there potential problems? I assume, like, are Fianna Fáil going to support it, the Fianna Fáil councillors, and then it goes to the minister? Like, how will this progress now?
It goes to council on Monday night, and the majority of councillors are supporting it. So it will be passed. And then the next step will be for Dublin City Council to start the design process, whether that be they use our own architects or tender out for an external architect and take it through that. The motion we passed asked that it would be developed in consultation with councillors through the public housing working group. So as John said about us having oversight, that we would be a partner in that. And I very much agree. I think we've come a long way in upskilling ourselves in the various aspects of this and paying attention to it. In the procurement process, I think the minister has to step in. We all know that there is a very lengthy process to procure anything. But it's, as John mentioned, it's the threshold for turnover, that the qualifying threshold for turnover to take part in the procuring process is excluding so many good businesses and builders. And I think that's in the gift of the minister through us and lobbying for it. But it is, like you mentioned Vienna there, that is absolutely the ideal. I think what has been driving home ownership and that's perhaps desire for people to own the roof over their head is the insecure rent system that we have. The fact that you can't get a 15-year rental agreement whereby you can live securely with a family and raise
lifetime
your family.
Agreement, Alison, lifetime.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, and with if you did have that secure rental model, you can rent according to your family size or your needs. So obviously, like, you might have two or three kids, now you need a bigger house, but like when they fly the nest, that's downsize and something that's smaller and easier to heat and all of that. So it allows that sort of flexibility in the system that a secure rental model would allow.
I have one question that Rory didn't add to the notes when we were talking about this, and it's because we're all talking about ideology, and I actually want to put the ideology out the window because I don't think it's some of this ideology. I think there's an element there that unfortunately we're facing a vote situation, and there's an idea that house prices have to remain high because a certain cohort of voters need to feel that there's equity, that after being in negative equity from the last crisis, need to feel like they've come out of that. And by definition, that means that house prices have to remain unaffordable for the majority of what Rory has referred to earlier as the locked out generation. And I think that your job as councillors now is to have that honest conversation, saying to people, do you want your house to be worth, here's that word again, €450,000, or would you like to see your children be able to live nearby and have a sustainable and affordable life outside of having to go to live in Navan or Tricales? And no offense to Navan or Kells, but that was just, you know, that's how things were in 2005, 2006, and there's a risk that we're going back down that road again. Are we being dishonest when we say why house prices need to remain inflated?
No, like Tony, it's a good point, and I've heard you make it before. There is, like, the history of the state has favoured the private mortgage market over the provision of social housing over decades, particularly the last 40 decades. You know, you look at it, and I think some of the fears I have around the development of this plan is that the city council officials and the department are just so wedded to the idea of the market being the one and only, the viable kind of provider and facilitator of any kind of housing, that for us to try work through the Oscar Traynor Road development to provide affordable housing and come up with new ways of delivering that is going to be very difficult. I think the idea of, look, I just think housing has been very difficult to mobilise around over the last decade because everybody sees it as their own private individual situation. And a lot of people are really struggling. We know this. A lot of people are really struggling. But to generalize out from your own particular circumstances and to be part of a wider movement around housing, there's been some moments where we've had that, but they haven't really applied the political pressure. But I do think that's where it has to come from. Those people who are locked out, those people who are in overcrowded accommodation, those people who are in horrible temporary emergency accommodation, the government parties don't care about them. We know this. They don't care about them. They never have. Why do they cut the budget for social housing so severely as they did? It's because they don't give a crap about the consequences of those decisions that they make. The people that they impact upon, they look after a certain cohort and they'll keep voting for them, who tend to be wealthier, who tend to be older. So it's our job. It's your job. You've been very good. Uplift are very good too. Rory mentioned earlier around mobilizing those who are directly affected by the lack of affordable housing in the city of Dublin and further afield to try, it's not going to be easy, but to try fight for affordable housing, for public land being used for affordable and public housing. And that's the battle we have. And of course, Tony, your point's well made. And Rory, your book goes through the financialization of the housing system. We're up against it. Lorcan Sear quotes a guy who, a kind of hedge fund advisor, who says the biggest threat to your investments in Ireland would be the delivery of affordable housing. Do you know? That's our job. That's what we have to do. But we're up against people who stand to make serious money by the status quo continuing, and who stand to lose a hell of a lot of money if we're in any way successful. So it's you know, it's not going to be easy, but we just have to try mobilize the public opinion of those who will actually stand to benefit from the delivery of public housing on public land. That's our job.
And I think, John, you're absolutely right in that, you know, it is about how do we connect with the locked out generation. And it's not just locked out. They're locked into unaffordable, insecure rents, but they're also many living at home.
Can I push in on that, Rory, for one second? All week we've heard people complaining about the 5K limit. Okay, I've seen all across social media, all across the news, saying when in lockdown they need to lift the 5K limit. It's linked to the eviction ban currently. That if they lift the 5K limit, we reinstate the evictions are then possible again. We're missing so many opportunities here to say to people, well, you know what? If we had a right to housing, your 5K, we wouldn't be as worried about it. But the government have said that the only reason that this is not that it's not interfering with the constitution is currently because it's a 5K limit and we're working within that. It doesn't inhibit the rights within the constitution to the right to private property. I'm just thinking we need to be more creative in terms of how we tell people. If you're concerned about the 5K limit, you should be concerned about a right to housing or a right to housing that matches the right to property within the constitution. I know you're probably thinking I'm going off, but I think we're missing opportunities at every turn here. And that's not a criticism of you guys. It's just a criticism of the movement. Sorry, go ahead.
I think, to be fair, that the movement and people who are affected, you know, have been trying. And if you look at the general election, you know, housing was the second, you know, the issue of second concern to people. And in part, that was because of the mobilizations. And I think that if you look at the opinion polls by the Irish Human Rights Commission, they show the majority of people are actually in favor of a right to housing. I think that there is a real challenge to mobilize them. But I think that we're getting there. And maybe just to finish, I think, Alison, and it does connect to what Tony's saying, the opportunities and how we communicate. The role of the real estate investors, which we see the cuckoo funds, that, you know, you've pointed out that potentially would be accessing this land and potentially be profiting from the land and true if the LDA bill passes. Maybe you could just outline, you know, what is the potential around that? And so people can see that this isn't just a case of the land maybe going to, you know, private housing. This is the land potentially going to real estate funds.
Absolutely. And that was one of the big concerns when we saw the Oscar Traynor proposal that Glenveagh, the 50% of those units could potentially go to an investor fund, because a lot of the developers, like, they don't have the money in their back pocket to build this. They use a forward funding process whereby they'll sell them off the plans. That gives them the money so they can build them. They become built, well, rental, insecure rental, potentially rented back to the state through HAP. And I think that, like, there's a huge amount of financial loopholes there with real estate investment funds. Like, if I'm not mistaken, they don't pay full tax on their profits. And I think we really need to start smothering them. We also need to stop build to rent, because, again, that's an investment for somebody that's controlling all those units. Co-living, the same. And Tony, you mentioned about the value of houses going up. The number of homes that's available for regular rental or for purchase is slowly shrinking. And by it shrinking, houses that go on the market for the ordinary person to be able to buy are increasing in price because there's fewer of them. So I think you talked about the 5K limit and how it can be used to retain the ban on evictions. If we could get rid of some of the planning decisions and the types of investment-driven developments, then we can also free up the land in particular to build homes, not commodities for trading and profit. It's homes. And I think that's where our focus should be, that what is a house? What is an apartment? It's a home for somebody to live and work and, you know, raise a family or grow old in, as opposed to where we're at in the at the moment, because a lot of the finances that are governing housing is aimed at allowing profit to be made as opposed to the public good.
Yeah, I think that's a, you know, a really good summation. And, you know, it's a message that we try and get out here. We support that idea of, you know, housing as home and not a commodity. And that is, you know, that is our challenge. How do we make our housing system ensure people have homes and secure adequate homes and that are affordable? And I think, you know, I say best of luck to John and Alison and the Dublin City Council in pursuing this. I think it's a really, really important development on not just this site, but other sites. And we look forward to supporting you into the future and having you back on to discuss the next phases when it's moving on to the department. So best of luck in that. And thank you for joining us today on Reboot Republic. And reminder, as always, to our listeners, please support us. Go over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Become a supporter, whatever you can, a fiver, a tenner, whatever you can each month. You get lots of goodies that Tony can talk about now. And just, yeah, please support us, keep going, and we will talk to you soon. Tony, you want to
All I want to say is in terms of what has been said here this evening, it's fantastic to hear councillors so actively engaged and knowing all about what's actually going on. It shows you that what's been a kind of an anti-democratic move by the minister to remove some of the powers, it's unfounded. This idea of councillors not wanting to get on with the business of doing it, this is clearly not true. This is demonstrated by that conversation. So if you're engaged like you are, and if you're listening to this, you obviously are, because that's why you're listening to Reboot Republic, is to let people know and share that knowledge, and let's get people more engaged with this. I know it's difficult out there at the moment. I know we're all going through a hard time, but this is for the greater good. Never mind. I know we always plug Patreon, but and we have to, because that's what pays for everything. But at the same time, we do this because we actually give a damn. So please do try and spread the word. Talk to y'all soon. Take care. Bye bye.